This is Gail Weisberg speaking, Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Interviewers, Gail Weisberg, Ezra Wise, respondent, Fanny Cohen. Date, May 9th, 1983. Okay? Fanny, when we spoke last time, we missed some information, we feel, and we'd like to go over it with you today. First of all, could you tell us your mother's name, full name, and then your father's full name?
My mother's name was Esther. Okay. And my father's name was Abraham.
Let's stop 1 minute and just check the tape to see if we hear you. So now we're ready.
So
you were
Cohen
saying
Abraham.
That your mother's name was Esther.
Esther Cohen, but a real Cain. Uh-huh. You know, there are a lot of Cohens that aren't.
Right.
Oh, I have to explain that. Huh? Did I mention that before?
I think you had mentioned that Sydney was not.
It was not a real Cain. That's why I was going to connect that up again right now. But as long as you've got it, that's okay.
Okay.
I think I told you that his father, you know, was not a Cain. All right, but my mother was.
Uh-huh.
Which gives me
and they were not related, am I right?
No.
Right.
No.
Okay.
My God, if all the Cohens in the world were related, we'd have to try.
It would be a big bar.
right.
Okay. When we spoke last time, you mentioned to us that your father had worked at the Fifth Power Plant.
Yes.
And he did that before he really mastered the language.
Right.
I know you were young then, but can you remember your life then when he was working at the power plant, or his life in relationship to you?
I'm not even sure I was born, because I was not born in Europe. I was born in the United States.
I see.
And this had to be one of the very first things that he did. And I'm sorry, I can't relate the time.
Okay.
I only know from hearsay, that he worked, that he did this because of the language problem.
Then that makes it clear to us maybe why we didn't get more information the last time. Okay. When he worked for Metropolitan Life Insurance, can you remember a little bit more about his job or his position or how it related to your family?
Well, I remember that he had what is called a debit. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that insurance men have door-to-door collections anymore. And his debit, if you may recall, we lived in the Hill District, but I don't think that really was the reason for his assignment. He walked up and down Lower Fifth Avenue, Tustin Street, Caldwell Street, and I can't remember some of the other tiny little streets. This was in the Lower Hill, off Fifth Avenue, door to door with his book, collecting insurance from people every week.
Right.
And I remember his sitting toward the end of the week with his book, adding up all the payments that these people made. I haven't the vaguest idea whether this kind of thing exists in communities anymore, or whether people just get a bill and they pay it. But in those days, I remember my father walked up and down the street door to door to get those insurance payments. I presume most of the people were people who couldn't afford to send a big check once a month, or maybe they did in a lot of areas. I really have no idea.
Okay.
And he used to work very long hours. I remember that. I don't think I remember too much more about it, but that was the way it was done then.
When we went over this, we realized we might have missed something else. We have heard that a lot of young children used to do shopping for their grandparents or for their parents. Can you remember ever having to do anything like that, being sent on errands for them and buying particular things?
I don't really remember in those days. I had older brothers, and one of my older brothers worked at the produce yard. Well, you know what, we call that the strip district now,
right.
I guess. And I remember that he was always responsible for bringing home fruits and vegetables. We were a great fruits and vegetables family, and I still am. And I remember that he brought a lot of that home. I can't remember that my sister or I at that time, and we were really quite young, the period that you're talking about, ever had to go to the store except to buy our own penny candy or our own dill pickle.
Right.
But not for the family. I just don't remember that we were probably not big enough even to carry the packages. And also, you know, there were no freezers those days. And I think that everybody just, you know, kind of went to the store, whatever you needed every day.
Did your mother do any of the shopping at that time?
She must have done a lot of the shopping because my father was out all the time. So she must have done a lot of the shopping. And I really can't remember. Oh, I remember Saturday night shopping. If that's
what was that?
That was going to, was it Rich's? On Fifth Avenue. We were never allowed to eat smoked meats very much. And maybe they were too expensive. But on Saturday night after Shabbos, we went with my mother to Rich's, I think it was called Rich's then, on Fifth Avenue and Logan Street. And we were allowed to buy corned beef and pickles and all these wonderful, salty, horrible foods for Saturday night supper. That I remember. I can still see my sister and me hang on to my mother and thrilled that on Saturday night this is what we could have.
Sounds like it was a nice thing to do.
It was wonderful. My mother was really quite, even in those days, it's amazing, was very conscious of health, of foods that affected one's health. And you know, like now kids do all kinds of things. They drink Coca-Cola and all that. That kind of thing didn't exist in their house. And this was a rule. You didn't get corned beef or salami or anything except Saturday night. And that was what we looked forward to. Walk down from our house down to Fifth Avenue. I think it was Rich's then.
Isn't there a Rich's now?
There is a Rich's down on 6th Street.
Is it spelled the same way?
Yeah, it's the same. It's a... It's a an outgrowth of that Rich's
really?
That was on
so
Fifth Avenue.
I see. So it might, this might be family, or at least the name.
Oh, I think so. I'm sure it was the name. Well, maybe the family doesn't own it now, but it certainly is the same name.
Okay.
Because I think eventually as the hill, the character of the hill changed, the people, the Jewish people moved out, the Rich's finally went to, had to go out of business
right. Well,
there. The other
you're in a better location
group.
For today than the
right,
you're right.
Right.
Are you comfortable sitting
I'm
like
fine.
That?
I'm
know last
to,
time
no,
you
I
sat
can think
back
better when I'm sitting on the end.
Okay,
if I get
I
back, I'll be
last
too relaxed.
Time
I'm a little accelerated when I get. I can bounce a little more. Oh, I have to tell you something else about it. Just when we got a little bit older, my sister and I were allowed to go down for our own sandwiches. I don't know whether you've ever had a plain chocolate soda without ice cream with a corned beef sandwich with a lot of fat. Oh, that was another thing. We were allowed to have all the fat, and you know now. When you go into a delicatessen, I want that lean piece.
Right. Oh,
show me the corned beef. I don't want the one with the fat. Oh, in those days, you ate the fat. It was simply marvelous. Nobody ever cut the fat from brisket, and nobody ever cut the fat from what? Well, no, you didn't. There's nice, the double corned beef with all the fat and the grain,
right,
and with a plain chocolate soda. That was heaven. One of the heavenly things in my childhood that I remember.
What was it? It was a seltzer with the chocolate,
well,
syrup,
chocolate
in it,
syrup
in it.
Chocolate syrup in it. Yeah, but something like the New York 2 cents plain, only they didn't put milk in it.
Uh-huh.
New York, they put milk in a 2 cents plain, but this was, you couldn't have milk with your corned beef.
Right,
of course not.
Why,
yeah, but there was something wonderful about that. I remember that, too. Yeah.
We looked over our notes. You were telling us the sad event. You had a young brother, 24, who died. And we had a lot of questions about that, but maybe you could remember some. I know you were younger at the time, but we wondered what hospital was he in when maybe he fell out of bed, you had said, or you said he thought he was for appendectomy, and he died. Imagine today that doesn't happen. That's why we thought we were questioning.
I really can't recall exactly. It could have been a Montefiore. It might not have been. I would not want to say anything that would reflect on the hospital. I'm not even sure. I don't think he fell out of bed after he got home, because I would have known about that. I know he fell out of bed in the hospital, but I really can't remember. No, and unfortunately my family's all gone. I can't even ask anybody. All my sisters and brothers are gone. I can't even ask anybody to try to clarify that for you.
Were you at the hospital ever?
No. I was four or 5 years old.
Like
no. We were sort of shunned away. We were.
I'm sure.
In those days, you know, children didn't get involved with family tragedies like they do now. I mean, people try to get children to understand what's going on, so there are some exceptions. But in those days, I mean, we might have been sent off to my aunt's house. And I just vaguely remember the funeral, but we were not too much involved. I think I was maybe 4 or 5 years old at the time. So that's why my memory is still vague on that.
We heard that in your day as a young woman, you were a wonderful dancer.
Who told you that?
Word is out.
Oh.
We thought maybe we could touch on that a little bit because we didn't speak about that at all on side one or side two.
Well, I have to tell you that I went to the Irwin Kaufman settlement. That was every child who lived in the Hill District then,
mm-hmm.
Jewish child that was possible, went to the Irwin Kaufman settlement on Center Avenue. And did I mention that I had dancing lessons with Ella Wertheimer?
Yes, that you mentioned.
And music lessons with Anna Lauf, and I appeared in all the, what they called them kermesses.
Uh-huh.
That was the extent of my dancing then. But I did, as a teenager, love to dance, and I still have, somewhere in my archive, early Cab Calloway, early Ella Fitzgerald, a Tisket a Tasket, not Benny Goodman, Glenn Miller, okay? And my greatest joy was to put those records on in my living room or wherever I was and dance by myself. I also went to teenage parties and was always the first one on the floor, never sat down, and the last one to go home and never stop dancing. Now I have to tell you the pinnacle of my career,
yes.
Okay? We had a friend whose name was Tibor Schick, an Hungarian horn player, T-I-B-O-R-S-H-I-K, who was a Hungarian horn player.
Mm-hmm.
Came to this country at the invitation of Fritz Reiner, who was a Hungarian conductor here and very loyal to his Hungarian compatriots, is that the way it was? Tibor wanted to become a citizen, which he did. And the day he became a citizen, he decided this was cause for the most wonderful celebration in the whole world. So he took us and a few other friends, and I can't remember who the other friends were, to several bars downtown. And I don't remember why we were drinking a lot of rum. It must have been Tibor's wish, but we were drinking pina coladas, would that be lots of rum? Whatever it was, we had lots of rum. One of our last stops was at the, is it called Cork and Bottle now or Oliver Restaurant? The one on Smithfield Street below the Oliver Building.
That was Cork and Bottle.
Cork and Bottle, okay. Somewhere along the way, Fanny Cohen decided that she was going to sing St. Louis Blues, which was the greatest song as far as I was concerned, and to dance, throwing my hips and my body around. And I got up, with the whole world looking, and sang St. Louis Blues with the cooperation of the band, and I danced. That was the beginning of my big career, and probably the end of my public showing. But that was an absolutely marvelous evening. And I have to go back and say, this Hungarian friend is still living. To him, it was the most marvelous thing in the world that he became a citizen of the United States.
Is that exciting?
Yeah. And that's my dance.
He'll never forget it.
Oh, I hope he doesn't. I'll never forget it, because you can imagine going through your life wanting to sing St. Louis Blues with an orchestra and not being able to do it. And there was it all there. And people didn't laugh or anything, because I was good. My husband loved it when I showed up. He just loved it when I get up and dance, and, you know. And he was just glowing. He thought it was simply marvelous. So my life's frustration. But I did dance a lot in the Irwin Kaufman settlement.
Mm-hmm.
Kermesses at the end of the year.
We also felt that possibly we could... Is somebody getting the phone?
Am I talking too much?
No, this is just what we want. We felt we had missed some points, and an example of that is...
Because I can make a story get so long.
No, please continue. We have all the time in the world.
All right.
You told us that you went to Pitt and graduated with a teaching degree and did some teaching at a church school and then later at Gladstone. What we're interested in is some descriptions. Possibly, if you can remember the church for the name, but for sure Gladstone, because I think the Gladstone is closed now.
Well, the Gladstone was evening. Evening, because I didn't have a job, I signed up for evening teaching. But it so happened that I started that same year, started to work for the Pittsburgh Symphony.
Right.
So I worked at the Pittsburgh Symphony during the day and taught Gladstone, I don't remember whether it was two or three evenings a week. I don't have too much recollection of that.
Of what it looked like, or...
No, it was obviously an older
area.
Building. No, I really can't remember too much about that. The church school was not really a church school. It was housed in a church, and if you... There's a big old stone building across from the Pitt Library. Is that old church still standing?
Which Pitt Library?
Excuse me, the Pitt Bookstore. I beg your pardon.
Okay.
The Pitt Bookstore. I think
there's a church there.
Big,
yes.
With great big stone.
Corner.
That's the building in which I taught typewriting and shorthand during the summer.
I see.
Summer school. And I can't remember whether that was under the auspices of the Pittsburgh Board of Education. It must have been, because I don't think it was a church. I think it was just housed in the church. I can't remember who was really my employer then. Maybe I could find out, but I really can't remember.
No, we have time for that.
But previous to that, I was a practice teacher at Shenley High School.
Oh, maybe you could tell us a little bit about Shenley.
And I can tell you, I have a lovely card from my children when I left there, and I'll show it to you, which says, my beloved teacher, Miss F. Mattis, our beloved teacher, Shenley High School, March 1934. And it says here, missing your smile and a sweet little poem inside, remember your fourth period English class at Shenley, 1934.
Was that the only class you taught there?
That's the other one, yes, because you were required.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed the children sent you a note.
Well, I think that's indicative of the kind of children that went to Shenley High School in 1934. Well, I remember that for the most part, I think you can almost know from this kind of note that there was a certain rapport between me and the children. I was very young. I graduated high school at 16, which means that I was in my last year at college at age 20. So I was not very much older than those kids. And we really had a very nice relationship. I thought I'd be scared, but I wasn't. Oh, I remember one boy, I think in the fourth desk in the middle row, who gave me problems. But on the whole, I think the children behaved very well.
Were they white?
I would say white.
Jewish?
I would say a lot of them were Jewish, because Shenley High School, I think the Hill District Elementary Schools fed into Shenley High School at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's where those kids, because there was no, like, Malinas Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
There were no high schools anywhere in the Hill District. Fifth Avenue.
Okay.
So maybe a lot of the Jewish kids went to Fifth Avenue. And maybe some of these children, they could have come from Squirrel Hill or Shadyside.
Or the Oakland area.
Or the Oakland area, too. I really can't be sure about that. I just don't know. But I don't remember. I think the children were respectful. Well, we had a real good time together. And I know that, I do remember that the teacher who was in charge left the room all the time when I was there.
I was going to ask you that.
Yes,
right.
She always left the room. You know, the teachers love to leave the room. And I think if she didn't think that the children were behaving well, that I was not doing well with them, she wouldn't have done it.
Can you remember the class size?
Yes, I think it must have been about 30. I remember there were five rows of desks and maybe going back about six desks. That stays in my memory fairly well. That was in my last year at college.
Well,
I don't know whether I got a grade for that or not. I'd have to look at my book. No, I don't think so. It probably was part of some course.
I bet you got a grade for it.
I might have. I have a blueprint somewhere, and maybe sometime I could
I could check that to see what, anyway.
Those children, if they were grading, you would have given you an A.
Well, I mean, at least they loved me. I don't know whether they got anything out of the class, but at least they loved me, because you can see. I mean, can you imagine children in the current, this high school, 18-year-olds now saying, our beloved teacher.
No. No.
I mean, this might come from one child or two, but not as a class getting together and saying, our beloved teacher, which I think is very indicative of the kinds of the way children behaved in those days. So that should give you a little something there.
We also talked with you about Sydney, and we felt we wanted more background on him. If you could tell us what you know about his growing up or about his parents.
Oh, wait, I have something here. Sydney grew up in the East Bronx of New York. Mm-hmm. His mother was very anxious for him to be a musician. His father was a tailor, I believe. Mm-hmm. But his father did not want him to be a musician. For his father, a musician was a klezmer from some shtetl in Russia, and you worked for nothing, and you were not, did not have any respect, and you were just a musician. And his father felt that it was degrading for his child to be a musician. Mm-hmm. However, and all those, also in those days, all the Jewish people were concerned about was that the children should become professionals or be able to earn a lot of money. And he could only visualize that a musician, what could a musician do? They play for people, that's all. But his mother had a different attitude. His mother felt, first of all, that he had a certain talent, and he was interested. And she used to say to him, you know, Sydney, this is, I never heard this, of course, but she used to tell me, you know, Sydney, when you're a musician, you only play when people are happy. You give people lots of pleasure. And this is a wonderful way to go through your life. Now, of course, they were poor people. His parents were immigrants, and there was not much money. So his mother used to take her grocery money and lay it aside for Sydney Cohen to get lessons. Mm-hmm. She also had a lovely daughter and tried to get the daughter to have lessons too with her. But the daughter never continued with it. But that was Sydney. But let me quote something about, well, I don't know whether I should tell you any more. Then when the family got a little more money, they moved to the West Bronx. That's like moving from the Hill District to Squirrel Hill.
Okay.
The West Bronx now is all black and it's pretty typical. But that's like going across the Grand Concourse.
Did somebody ask the door? I heard somebody.
I thought that was Pauline, but she asked. Can you stop this?
Sure.
No, okay.
Well, somebody's still there, Fanny. Fanny is at the door right now. Somebody's at the front door.
Okay, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, then his family moved to the West Bronx, which was, as I said, like moving from the Hill District to Squirrel Hill. I think his father probably began to make more money. I don't think the family was ever wealthy, but they evidently got along very nicely. But his mother insisted that he must continue with his violin. I don't know that I can tell you anything more about their life at that time. The kids played in the streets. No grandparents that I knew of. He had lots of aunts and uncles, mm-hmm. Some of whom I met in later years. But I don't remember.
And he had the one sister.
He had Sister Carol, and he had a brother who's still living.
Uh-huh.
His brother was Caroline.
And the brother's name?
Was Aaron. And my son, our son Carl, is named for his sister Caroline, because she died at age 31. And that's another story of how we got Carl. But I'll go back, I'll come to that in a minute. You're going back to Sydney. This is quoted from an interview. I began playing the violin when I was 8 years old. Of course, my mother thought I was going to be another Yasha or Misha or Isaac. When I was in school, even grade school, we had very good orchestras. At James Monroe, I'm quoting my husband, at James Monroe High in New York, the orchestra director asked if anyone would like to switch to the viola. The concertmaster nudged me to raise my hand. I don't know if he was trying to get rid of me or not, but I said, okay, and I've stayed with the viola ever since. One day, a friend encouraged me to attend auditions for the Pittsburgh Symphony, which were being held that afternoon in New York's Carnegie Hall. The orchestra was to add 20 musicians. Sidney was playing in a string quartet and had an engagement to play later in the day.
Okay.
When he arrived at Carnegie Hall, he saw more than 300 other musicians waiting. He explained his predicament to the orchestra manager, Edward Spector, excuse me. The understanding manager got him an immediate hearing. Dr. Otto Klemper, the orchestra's musical director, was impressed with his ability. When the six-day audition period was over, Dr. Klemper could not decipher Sidney's handwritten but illegible address and phone number. And by the way, I was the only one in the world that could ever read his handwriting. After 3 days of telephone calls to what seemed like almost all of the cones in New York City, Dr. Klemper finally located him and proceeded to chastise him about his penmanship. Then he hired him as assistant principal viola.
Oh my.
And further quoting Sidney, this is the way my life works out. Life works out sometimes. Mr. Spector could have said, sorry, we cannot take you before all the other people waiting to audition. And Dr. Klemper could have given up on trying to locate me, but they didn't, and I'm very glad. Don't forget, my biggest debt of gratitude to Mr. Spector, excuse me, was in meeting his secretary. Fanny and I have been married for, at this time, 36 years. She's really my right hand.
Now, what's this from, Fanny?
This is from the Jewish Exponent of Philadelphia. And at the time this interview took place with my husband, he was on dialysis. He was in the hospital. You see, it says here, he was in the Abington Hospital, and the doctor in Abington, the doctor who was very interested in his case and also wanted, there's more to the article, which explains something about the goals of kidney doctors who have patients with dialysis and are anxious for them to be encouraged to pursue their lives in the best way that it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
That was really the inspiration for this article, and there's a lot more to it, but we were now talking about my husband's career. He did study I have some other material now.
Wait, that Exponent that you were just reading,
it's
from,
like
what's
the Jewish Chronicle.
Okay, and then what's the
date
from that?
The date is
one?
August 12th, 1977.
Okay.
My husband died in January 1978. This was 6 months before he died.
Mm-hmm. Is that your husband there?
This is my husband here, and this is Stan Leonard, who is the principal, the timpanist for the Pittsburgh Symphony.
So they were on the cover of that newspaper?
Yes. They were the paper was very interested in this, and the kidney doctor was very interested. And I have to say, my husband was a marvelous subject, as you can probably tell from the way he spoke. And there's a lot from the doctor.
Do you want to tell us more about the kidney and his problems?
Well, he had a kidney problem Well, I have to make a long story out of it.
That's okay. We have a lot of tape and a lot of time.
All right. In what war was it? The 1940, the Second World War? 1941 war? Mm-hmm. Sydney was then working part of the time in Pittsburgh and part of the time in New York. The Pittsburgh-Sydney season was so short that he had to do some work in New York. So with the Pittsburgh, with the New York Ballet or some of the musicians worked at the Metropolitan Opera, and he worked at the, oh, at that time, the Firestone. There was a Firestone radio program with Alfred Wallenstein, and he played that radio and did a lot of radio work, too. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the draft board had an awful time getting in touch with him because half the time he was in Pittsburgh, every time they wanted him, you, Uncle Sam wants you. Sidney Cohen was either in the Bronx, if it was Pittsburgh, or he's in Pittsburgh when they called him in the Bronx. Anyway, they finally got him in the Bronx, and he went down. We had a party for him, and he went down to say goodbye and was leaving. And we get a call later in the afternoon to his mother, "I'm coming home, Mom." It turned out at that time they discovered that he had albumin in his kidneys.
Mm.
Which is indicative of this kind of disease. He was very fortunate that